What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Planeswalkers Anonymous. And like, this is really a welcome back, because we've been gone a while, haven't we, Donovan?
I don't know what you're talking about. I've been speaking in a Discord every week trying to make recordings. Have they not been being posted?
No, there haven't been episodes going up, and I'm pretty sure that you haven't had anyone, like, in a discourse with you. How did those episodes go?
I was thinking that your side seemed a little bit sparse. Yeah.
I mean, well, it can't have had any less, like, magic knowledge what's the word I'm looking for? Strategy. Like hardly any magic knowledge or the same amount of magic knowledge and strategy coming from my end as there ever was.
Well, you know, that's why I thought I could keep it going, but I guess if you weren't recording those sessions that you weren't in, that would probably help.
See, I know that we recorded at least one episode that just never got done and posted, and so I'm not sure how much got communicated to our listeners about us going off the air. I will say here, what was going on was at the time, we were coming up on Christmas, and it turned out I had to take on another job, and I just had zero extra time. I couldn't afford not to do the job, and I didn't have time to be doing the podcast and working two jobs, and something had to give there. And unfortunately, it ended up being the podcast, but kind of in a better place now, and Donovan and I have been talking about how we can make the podcast happen in a way that's going to be a little less taxing on my time. And so we think that we can bring it back, boot it back up, and try and get an episode out for you every week. It's going to work a little differently. We're going to get into all that in just a minute. Before we get started, I want to talk about Boardwalk. It's Boardwalk Games in North Dallas. North Dallas? Is it North Dallas?
Yes.
All right. Where we get...
In fact, if you go literally any more north, like you cross a street, you're no longer in Dallas.
That's where I get all of my magic product and accessories, and I think that's where all of you should go to, because it's just my favorite place to go. It's just the coolest place to hang out in Dallas, too.
Yeah. I'm hoping we get to start hanging out again.
Yeah. You guys are open for in-person sales. Are you doing events yet?
No, still not doing events yet.
Any ETA on those?
No.
Okay. Well, still, if you need singles to finish off your commander deck, or sealed product to get your friends together for a draft at home, or some deck boxes, sleeves, any of that stuff, Boardwalk Games in Dallas. Or you can now go to, is it boardwalkgames.com?
Boardwalkgames.com. It is hyphenated, though, so sometimes people like to say boardwalk-games.com. But there's not a word dash in the middle, so sometimes I'm hesitant about that.
Sure. Like, boardwalks, or boardwalks, boardwalk-games.
No one's going to know what website to go to at the end of this, but that's fine.
Do what?
I was joking about us, like, keep changing things. I was saying, no one's going to know what website to go at the end of this, but that'll be all right.
Boardwalk-games.com for all your magic needs. They got an online store now, too.
Yep.
All right.
And I guess I said we're not doing events. That's mostly true. We have been participating in the Pokemon Team Challenge events, which are done over Discord with people playing at home on their Pokemon TCG Online clients.
Yeah.
So I have been participating in those. If you play Pokemon and you want to participate in a free event that can get you cool prizes, then feel free to jump on that. Like this last season of it, we made it to the top 64 in the world playing Pokemon on that.
Wow.
So that was cool.
Is that where y'all ended?
Yeah, we got knocked out in the top 64.
You get knocked out by that Swiss team?
Yeah.
Dang.
The Swiss. Arr, they got us.
Yeah, I thought that wasn't going to fire at all. Nope, but with the support of Boardwalk and my schedule coming back together, sort of. I don't know what coming back together means. We're going to try and get the show back running. And I'm going to try and restructure our website and our Patreon. I think it might be important for anyone out there who is supporting us on Patreon, and you don't necessarily want to just start getting auto-billed for that again. If you haven't discontinued it, I haven't actually started it again yet, so you have a chance to go make any changes to that you want to, and as soon as it's back up with a new format, new structure and everything, I will let any listeners who would like to join us now that we're back I'll let you guys know about that so that you can help the show happen. What else did I need to say about that, Donovan?
I don't know, dude. You didn't tell me.
Okay. And we're also going to be making some changes to how the show actually works. We used to do events and news, and we had a finance section, and then a main topic, and a judge call, and all that stuff was really cool, and I liked doing it. And a couple of those segments, we had listeners actually request that we do that stuff, and so we added it to the show. And we got feedback that people liked some of that stuff, and so I really liked doing it. But, like I said, getting this show actually done is going to be a priority for bringing the show back, is to actually get the episodes edited and posted regularly so the show is actually happening consistently and you can rely on getting your Planeswalkers Anonymous every week. And in order to facilitate that, one of the things that we're going to work on is we're just going to kind of cut down the show some. We're not going to stop doing the news or stop talking about events and stuff. It's just when those topics are what we want to talk about, that will be the episode. We will do an episode about the big news story that's happening in the community. And when those things aren't something that we need to talk about, we'll do some of our other topics. And hopefully we can work things like finance and judge calls and stuff in as topics when we have enough that we want to say on those topics to do an episode.
Cool.
And as far as the Patreon goes, when I get that up and running again, I'm hoping to set it up with a bit more incentives and tiers and stuff like that, because I had designed it originally following a pattern that I like with a lot of people who produce content. They just make their content and I say, hey, you don't really get anything for supporting us on Patreon. It's just if you like the show, we appreciate it, and that's it. You know, it's always, the show's always free, but you can support us if you want to. And I like that model because I don't really like asking people to give me money, you know, and I'm not very good at selling myself.
I think the ladies would disagree.
Oh, you.
You're excellent.
You would.
Excellent.
What? Oh. What? Ah. All right. Fine. Yeah. Well, it's not the ladies who are interested in that.
Oh, okay.
But I really like that model, but I think, as it turns out, that model really works best for someone who is, like, well-known and successful content creators. For the things that the show costs, I need to do a little bit more to get people interested in joining us on Patreon. So I've got some ideas for that, and I'll be updating people as I get things done, and when I get the Patreon actually posted, we'll have some stuff on there that I hope will be interesting and exciting for people. But one of the reasons why I brought it up again is because another thing I'm going to try and do each episode is I'm going to open a pack of cards. I'm just going to open a pack of Magic cards. I'm going to look and see what's in them. And at the end of each month, starting next month, because hopefully the Patreon will be up and this month is just this week, I'm just going to ship all of the cards that we opened up to someone on our Patreon.
Okay.
And because I thought it would be fun, I can't afford to do it every time, but I thought it would be fun, I'm going to open up a Strixhaven Collector's Booster today.
Ooh, fancy.
Right? So, when I get the Patreon posted up again, anyone who's on there has a chance to win the complete contents of the pack that I'm about to open. Do what?
Said the contents of this collector booster.
Yep.
But I said it at the same time as you.
Yeah. So, that's the sound of me literally opening up a booster pack of cards right there. And we got...
Okay.
We got a Foily Infused with Vitality, Square Up, Frost Trickster. These are like all foils. Witherbloom Pledge Mage, Biblioplex Assistant, Karok Wrangler, Golden Ratio, Environmental Sciences. Alright, cool. That's a bunch of junk. And we've got our rare, Pestilent Cauldron. And we've got a full art, extended art, Yadora Grave Gardener, a extended art Ifrit Flame Painter.
I think that card's underestimated right now. I haven't seen anybody playing with it, but it seems quite powerful.
I've got a Japanese Ponder, I guess. It's hard to tell.
Probably Opt.
Oh yeah, Opt. I think that's probably right.
Is there a 1 in the text box or a 2? Or a three?
One.
Yeah, it'd be op then. So you scry one.
And then we got a mystical archive, demonic tutor. That's
regular or foil?
That's the etched foil, demonic tutor. We've got
nice.
A regular foil, mystical archive, thrill of possibility.
That's cool. That's cool.
And then a foil Japanese mind's design.
Probably also quite a good
foil. And a double faced token. That's treasure and fractal. Alright.
Oh, the fractal one that you thought was pretty. Too bad you're giving that away.
Yeah. Well, that's alright. So I don't know. Any of this stuff could be cool or worth something to somebody, but the things I thought were particularly notable here, this foil Japanese mind's desire is probably pretty serious business there. And this etched foil mystical archive demonic tutor.
That mind's desire is probably about $70.
Whew.
Hopefully just everybody unsubscribes from the Patreon this month and lets you keep all those. And then
I'll tell you what, if we have zero subscribers at the end of next month, I will just keep them. But
I'm just kidding. They'll unsubscribe, so you get to keep those cards, Duncan. Don't do that.
No,
don't tell them.
I want to give them away. I am not kidding about this. If you join our Patreon for $1 a month, you get a shot at winning is a $70 card plus whatever else
you have open
the next couple of
months. There are two $70 cards in your pack.
That demonic tutor is another $70.
That's 60, but
okay. I figure this Japanese opt is probably worth something. Might not be a lot, but then I don't know about the rest of these rares.
That opt's the etched foil Japanese one, right?
Well, it's got like the little bitty bit of foiling around the border of the text box.
That's yeah, it. That's what that means.
Okay. Well, the mind's desire is way pretty.
Yeah.
No, opt isn't a normal card, but I figure these Japanese ones probably add to the value.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm gonna set these aside, and I won't be able to open up a collector's booster for every episode, but I'll try and, you know, find cool things and get some interesting cards opened up, and whoever does win them is gonna get like 4 or 5 packs worth of cards, you know? So
yeah,
that's got whatever value that has to you.
And hopefully they value that at least $1 a month. Yeah, right?
Sure, I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking, is surely a chance to win several packs of cards every month is worth $1, right?
Yeah.
Anyhow, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about, tell me, or let the listeners know before we get into our main event for this week?
No, I'm good.
All right.
I don't like talking to people about stuff, so.
Cool. Well, clearly, I'm very awkward about it because, you know, I stumbled over that and repeated myself and mentioned the Patreon and then moved on from that and then went back to it.
It's all good.
Anyway, this week we're just talking about Strixhaven because we were off the air when this set came out. We kind of missed Kaldheim and what else were we gone for? Was that it?
Because
we did Zendikar Rising just like right before we went off, like we talked about it.
Yeah. I mean, like, we didn't talk about, like, the supplemental stuff, like Time Spiral Remastered right. And stuff, but...
But Strixhaven has just come out, and the show is just going back up, so we thought we'd talk about our first impressions of Strixhaven to get the ball
rolling. Yeah, I think you're probably coming at this from a limited perspective, and I'm probably going to be attacking it more on some of my first impressions of the standard cards.
Yeah, I guess that's probably about right, because the thing is, I play almost exclusively draft. I've played a little bit of sealed. I've played a little bit of standard.
For those listening at home, I would like to comment, that's an improvement of when we went off the air where you just didn't play Magic.
Yeah. Well, at that time, I still preferred Limited, and I frequently made comments about cards from a Limited perspective, because that's my preferred way to play Magic. But that is true. When we were doing the show before, I was playing zero Magic. But I got excited about playing some Magic when I got some more free time. I stopped working two jobs. I had a little bit more free time. I started playing some Magic. I've been playing a lot of Strixhaven Limited, actually. And so I'm hoping I can continue doing that because I'm sort of going optimal. And what I mean by that is I'm not going infinite. I'm not really winning enough to pay for all my next drafts or whatever. But I'm winning enough that I pay for enough that I have not had to add any more gems or any kind of money to my account for a couple of months, so we'll see how long that can. I'm steadily going down on gems. I'm not going up, but slowly.
But it's creeping down instead of plummeting down like mine.
I don't know why yours will be plummeting. Well, actually, I do. It's because you don't take my advice about which events to play in.
And I rare draft all the best time. EV. I do a lot of rare drafting.
I don't know, man. Sometimes I can tell, like, from looking at someone's deck that they clearly just rare drafted the entire draft, and they whoop my butt.
I'm just like, I need that card for my standard deck.
Sure. But, I don't know. Let's, like, launching into it, Dom, and, what have been your impressions of Strixhaven? Were you excited about it, or?
Really enjoyed this set. Mm-hmm. The artwork is great. I love what's going on in, like, all of these pictures. I made fun of it before, like, the set had been released, because, like, oh, it's the Harry Potter set, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But, like, once we've got a hold of these cards, like, I just like what's going on. The Silver Quill stuff where they're, like, making these, like, ink creatures and stuff is super cool. The Prismari and Quandrix arts, there's not, like, a thing in there that I think is super cool, but it's just, like, all of the different pictures, the color on them is just so fantastic on those two schools or whatever mm-hmm. they're called, that I love what's going on there. The Lorehold stuff is just, it's a really interesting stuff in that one, just because, like, what's going on in the pictures is usually pretty interesting in those ones. Just,
sure.
Like, Quintorius field historians, like, elephant Indiana Jones, you know? Like, that's super cool looking.
Yeah.
And then just, I think that the Witherbloom stuff just really appeals to my, like, inner emo kid. Like, it's just so cool looking.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta agree with your comments on the art there. Like, I love it. I think the art is really top-notch. I was saying to you just earlier today that there's a new artist. He actually started in Throne of Eldraine, but he only did the, like, showcase cards for Throne of Eldraine. Hold on, I'll look up what his name is, because that seems like the right thing to do.
And seems doable from where we're at now.
Is Wiley Beckett. Or Beckert. I'm sorry. Okay. Beckert. There's an R there. So Wiley Beckert, yeah. I've been super impressed. I really liked his work in Eldraine. He did, like, the showcase Fae of Wishes, and so they also did the art for Go Blank.
Yeah, it looks like their first Magic art was Finishing Blow for Corset 2021.
I just really like that style.
Wait, you said they did Throne of Eldraine stuff, right?
Just showcase card.
Yeah.
Like, collectible.
They just didn't come up whenever I did a Gatherer search for Wiley Beckert.
Huh. Well, as longtime listeners will know, I use Scryfall, which mm-hmm. is better. I've been courting that Scryfall sponsorship long term. We're working on it. But while I am really impressed with the artwork, I think what you were saying about how you were making fun of it for being kind of the Harry Potter set, and then you were impressed with it when it came out. I think both can be true. I think it is a little bit Harry Potter. I think it's not entirely. Like, I get how it's not. But there are some things, like how the different colleges, not houses, but colleges, are named after the founders of them. And also, yeah. I think that I don't think that was necessary. And I don't think that it was necessary that their founding dragons that, like, represent them and stuff had to be named the same as the college. Because it really seems like they named the colleges and then made those the dragons' names, because they don't really sound like dragon names. Like,
maybe the dragons took on the name of their college.
That's not the literature that but maybe it has just not been communicated well to me. Anyway, I do think that it's conceptually, it's got some cool stuff. It's also got some silly bits that are clearly very Harry Potter inspired. But the cards so far, like, just as Magic cards, is just a lot of great Magic cards in this set, and I'm having really fun with a lot of fun with it. And honestly, I started getting
unfortunately though somewhat lacking in Strix.
In what?
Strixes.
Oh.
There's one Strix, and it's a fake.
How is it a fake?
It's a illusion named Dream Strix.
Oh, okay. I actually had not looked at how many Strixes there were. Strix, for our listeners who don't know, a Strix is a kind of bird.
Yeah, looks a lot like an owl. I don't know enough about owls. Maybe it's a kind of owl.
Yeah,
but
do you know if Strixes are real birds or if they're a magic thing, like Kavu?
I think they're a real bird.
Okay, it might be, I don't know. I don't know about birds, Stone. I'm sorry that my bird knowledge is not up to par.
Are not real birds, but they're birds out of real mythology.
Okay. Well, honestly,
But it looks like it is a derivation of the Greek and Roman word for owl, so.
All right. Well, honestly, I was starting to get back into magic at the end of call time, and I was really impressed with the card quality in call time. I had a lot of fun playing with Fortell, and that was really good in Limited especially. I had so much fun with that. And then Strixhaven came out, and I just moved straight into drafting Strixhaven, and I have been knocking them out. I think in the last, two or three weeks, I've played 6 drafts on Arena, which may not be a lot to those of you who are, playing Arena every day, but...
Uber nerd, like Donovan.
But for me, long-time listeners realize, we used to go weeks where I'd be like, all right, Donovan, what did you do this week? What magic were you playing? And you'd tell me about it, and you'd be like, oh, what'd you do, Duncan? I'd be like, oh, I looked at cards on the internet.
But, so what have you thought of the set in general?
Well, what I've thought of it in general, I mean, I think that I basically just said what I thought of it in general, so I'm going to go a little bit.
Was that you feel the same as me?
I'm basically, yeah, I was saying that I've been really impressed with the quality of the individual cards. I think it's a lot more complex than some of the previous sets. I don't know exactly how far back we go to get to where I'm referencing.
Yeah.
But I felt like a lot of sets had, I don't know, a low density of complexity and really cool cards. And Kaldheim and Strixhaven both have really impressed me with the amount of cards that I found interesting and look forward to playing with and want to draft and play with.
From a limited perspective, how do you feel about the Mystical Archive?
Oh, I love it. I love having the Mystical Archives because they're just interesting. They're mostly good cards. They generally don't change anything about how you draft or anything. They're just some good cards that you can pick up in the draft that make it interesting and different, you know?
Yeah, something I really like about them is they basically make this set for Limited 350 cards.
Yeah.
And so it's just, so many more cards for you to play with in Limited that the decks are more different than usual.
Sure.
Because the set's already slightly larger than some sets. It's 275 cards, whereas some sets are only, 250 230, and sometimes that's counting basic lands, which the set doesn't have in the normal set numbers.
Right.
And so it's it's already 275, excluding with no basics, and then you add these other 63 different cards on top of it.
Yeah. And I also just aside from Arena, but in real life packs, I really like the fact that there's a Mystical Archive in every pack, because even the ones that aren't especially valuable or aren't super exciting cards are quote-unquote common Mystical Archives, they're cool. They're generally cards that are cool cards, and the Mystical Archive version of it is cool, and every single pack has something cool for you to open in it.
And if you really want to hammer that point home to any of our listeners at home that really have been paying attention and know you, Duncan opened packs just to open them because he wanted to see the Mystical Archives that were in them whenever we did our pre-release stuff.
Yeah, I did. I did do that. I felt dirty.
It was wild.
As I opened packs without doing some kind of Limited. That's so wasteful. But I've been having a lot of fun with it. I love the Mystical Archives. I think that's brilliant. I think that I liked all of the showcase cards, but from various other sets, but I was always disappointed because they're just so rare, it's not reasonable for me to expect to get some, especially when I'm not opening a lot of packs. But there's a Mystical Archive in every pack. And one might say, oh, doesn't that devalue it, make it less special? But no, it doesn't, because all of the Mystical Archives are cool, and they all have cool new artwork, and, well,
Yep, all of them. 100% of those artworks are great.
I don't especially want to get into that. So I don't want to tear anybody down.
I think all of the artworks are well made.
Sure.
But that's just because I am not an artist. Except for the one that's traced. That one's probably not good.
Yeah, I guess there are a couple of places we could nitpick some of the art direction and execution for...
And legality.
for Mystical Archives. But I'm very excited about them. Even the ones I don't like, I think are cool to open. And
yeah,
I'm very happy with
them. Yeah, yeah. I am enjoying the way Strixhaven's playing out in Standard, and I also enjoy the way the Mystical Archives have really affected Historic, too.
Yeah.
So
I saw a celebrity, I'll just say that, because I'm not trying to call anyone out or, you know, like start beef on the podcast, but I saw a Magic celebrity on the Twitter who was saying that, this was like right after Strixhaven came out, but he was saying, you know, the Strixhaven cards must not be very good because no one's playing them in Standard at all. Like, what's your impression of that?
Well, I think that person is just not taking into account that this is the 7th set in Standard, so Standard is very large.
Mm-hmm.
So to have an effect on Standard, you're not going to have the same effect that you did with Zendikar Rising, where rotation happened, you know?
Yeah.
Or Kaldheim, where rotation had just happened and we have these... There's a new injection of cards, you know, like we've gotten a point where Standard has kind of settled into these decks.
Sure.
And this is just one set. So it's going to be hard to shake up what everybody is doing.
Yeah. I guess what you would expect to happen with a new set at this point is maybe a couple of cards go into some existing decks. You don't see a lot of like brand new decks that are like half Strixhaven cards.
Yeah. And I mean, I saw one today when I was playing the standard metagame challenge thing on Arena.
Oh, yeah?
But yeah, but really, like, mostly you're seeing decks that were not quite good enough before are kind of getting better, like the green white Hate Bears style deck that people are playing a little bit of is a little bit better, or stuff like the Sultai deck that played Emergent Ultimatum, like, is just getting hosed all over the place now. So I think that there are cards that are boosting certain decks, and there's good cards for interacting with other decks that didn't exist before, and I think that they are affecting Standard. But it's not as obviously noticeable as it was with the last couple sets. But that's how it gets with sets 7 and 8 in Standard, is those ones don't get to affect Standard as much as set number 5 and 6.
Sure. Yeah, I think when I first mentioned it, because I read that on my phone and you were there, and I was like, Donovan, what do you think of this? What you said then also, I think, made a lot of sense to me. It was like, also, when you have a Magic celebrity saying something on Twitter, there's a reasonable chance that they're just saying something polarizing to get a conversation started.
Yeah, yeah. And even if they may not agree with it, they may not be trying to just be like, I'm just going to say this because it's polarizing and get a conversation started, but they might be like, legitimately just going, if I say this, people will talk to me, and then I can have a conversation about this topic I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I say the other thing, people are just like, yeah, that's true, and they'll just go on with their life.
Right. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I don't actually have a lot to add to how it's affecting Constructed, so if you don't mind, I'm gonna make a comment about Limited Strixhaven now.
Yeah.
So far, I don't know what your experience has been, but I really think that Lorehold, that's the red-white guild.
The Boros guild?
Yeah, the Boros guild. I think Lorehold is probably the strongest college you can be playing in draft right now.
I really disagree.
Really?
I think it is the strongest one that you're likely to be able to play.
Okay.
But I think if you don't have anybody else at your table drafting Silverquill, Silverquill is better.
You think so? I
think it's hard to do because everybody wants to play those cards.
I thought at first glance, when I just looked at the cards but hadn't played any, that Silverquill was probably the strongest one. And I don't know, you may be right, because I do think it's fairly close. But just in my experience, you get much better removal in red-white.
Mm.
And also, like the individual creatures tend to be stronger. They're not as resilient, but they tend to be harder.
That could be where we're differing, is that in my limited games, the way that I am usually the most successful is finding a strategy in limited that is just going to never run out of stuff to do.
Yeah.
I just always want stuff to do. It doesn't have to be good stuff, just stuff. You know? And in limited, that's what my game plan in limited is, just like I'm doing stuff until my opponent dies.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And like I've heard that advice from people on who play a lot of limited. They're like, "Look, the person who does the most stuff in limited wins the limited."
Yeah. That's for
sure. And so I don't want to do the most stuff all at once, but I do just want to always keep doing stuff. And I think Silver Quill is a lot better at continuing to have stuff to do.
Okay. I get that. I think that's reasonable. I guess my philosophy is more comes down to I play a kind of a tempo game. Just like I want to get something onto the battlefield and I want to start beating you with it. And then I'll do everything I can to interrupt or negate the things that you're doing and try and make sure I still have something on the battlefield to beat on you with. And then I want a couple of cards in my deck that give me some kind of reach. Like, even if it's just like a lava axe to close out that last 5 damage or something, you know?
Yeah. But I was talking to somebody about it the other day, and I was saying that I think the black cards and the white cards are the best ones in the set for limited.
Yeah.
Which is why I think that Lorehold's better to play, is because the red and white cards are better than the black-white cards, and you still get all those white cards, but then all the Witherbloom people are also going to be taking all the black cards that are good from the Silverquill players.
Yeah.
So the Silverquill players are competing with the Lorehold players for all, and the Witherbloom players for all their best cards, whereas the best Witherbloom and Lorehold cards are gold, and so they don't have to compete with the other players at the table for them as much.
Sure.
And so that's why I think the Silver Quill stuff is the best, is I think the white cards and the black cards are the best.
Okay. I see that, but I don't know, man. What about, I'm scrolling. I like Heated Debate and Igneous Inspiration. Like, those are both...
What is Igneous Inspiration?
It's the 3 mana.
Oh, it's the learn.
3 damage with learn. It's a sword.
I have seen an Igneous Inspiration once in draft.
That's, oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen it in draft one time.
Oh, man, I've had it a couple of times.
And I've played 7 drafts.
Wow. Okay, well, it is an uncommon, but I've seen it more often than that.
The black and white common removal is very good, though.
And, like, Pigment Storm is a little expensive, but it's not terrible for...
But Mage Hunter's Onslaught, Lash of Malice, those cards are amazing.
My Lash of Malice is okay.
Go Blank is useful. Flunk at Uncommon is very good, too.
Have you used Flunk? Because I've...
Yeah, it has destroyed my opponents every time.
Really?
Yeah, like, that card is
amazing. I feel like a lot of the time it's either only going to work on something very small or you're going to play it on something after they've mostly emptied their hand. And like that middle ground is really where it's going to be best, is like in between the small things and when they've emptied their hand. And like that's just a fairly narrow place that it's going to be good.
I kill 3/3s and 4/4s with it all the time. Yeah. And for a 2 mana removal spell, that's really good.
Yeah, okay. I believe it. Like I said, I was kind of on the fence about it. I wasn't saying it was bad. It just like I wasn't sure that it was good.
But I do agree that the white removal is very good too. So you've got
like Expel is
I picked up an Expel 15th pick in the like pack one.
Yeah, dude, I got it like as a last pick.
And I was just like, how is this still here? This is one of the best cards in these colors.
Yeah, I know.
Or in this color, I mean.
I know. Expel is a premium card. I think I first picked it.
Yeah, that card's very, very good.
Yep, and Defend the Campus. I get Defend the Campuses really late, too. I think it's because it costs 4, and it only hits things with power 4 or greater. But, like, that creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn is not to be overlooked.
I splashed white in my black-green deck to play Defend the Campus.
Yeah.
I had 2 of them, but it worked amazing because I had all these pests.
Sure.
From playing black-green. I splashed white for 2 of those. It was great.
I think 4 is... I don't think people realize that in Limited you can play like 4, 5, and 6 drops more often than you can in Constructed.
Yeah.
And so, like, Defend the Campus costs 4, but that's fine in limited. It's not, like, ideally you want it to cost less, right? Like, if you could choose, you would pay less, right? But yeah. 4 is fine. You can cast that reliably, and then it either will destroy their big scary thing if they have a big scary thing, or if they don't, there's still value to it. And sometimes it's better to give your team +1/+1. Yep. And it's an instant. Like, oh, I really like Defend the Campus. And like I said, I think I've first picked an Expel, which for anyone listening who just doesn't know the cards off the top of their head, Expel costs 3 instant and exiles a tapped creature. And
do I need to explain the cards I said?
possibly. I mean, I don't think we need to like just go back and list them. I just thought, since I thought of it right now, I would go ahead and let people know what the ones we were just now talking about were. And I like to point out to people, I know most of our listeners are probably experienced enough players that they picked up on this without my help, but since Expel is an instant, when somebody declares their attackers and then taps their attacking creature, you can expel them before you even block.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there was a 2-mana exile target tap creature at sorcery speed that people played a lot of in, I think, like, M21
yeah.
limited. And I think paying an extra mana so the thing doesn't get to hit you first is exactly where I want to be, you know?
Yeah.
I'll pay 1 mana so my opponent's creature does not hit me.
Right. Yeah, I think the red-white cards are real scary.
They are. The red-white cards are very good. I did have somebody the other day telling me about how they thought the Lorehold Pledge Mage was so terrible. I'm like, that card's amazing.
Which one is the Pledge Mage? Because there's
a red-white hybrid guy that's 2/2 first strike magecrafts for +1 plus 0.
They thought he was bad?
Yeah, that card's very
good. Oh yeah, it's very good. Like, it's 2/2 first strike for 3 would be fine. Like, that even good. Like, 2/2 first strike for 3 would be a card I would play. And then the magecraft is just makes it better.
The Magecraft is, like, not super significant, except for the fact that this card has first strike, you know?
Right.
Like, Magecrafting for +1/+0 on a first strike creature is super good.
Yeah, yeah, that is real good. And, on top of that, like, Magecraft, which is basically
triggering the same things as,
Prowess. Magecraft Prowess, is like Prowess, except it
has different effects on different
creatures. It has different effects, and it counts copying things. Which I thought was interesting, because there's almost nothing in this set that copies instants on sorceries, but that, like, other...
There's not a lot of things that copy other instants and sorceries, but there are several instants and sorceries that copy themselves.
Like what?
Plum the Forbidden is the, like, the big one, right? Yeah, the name of it. Yeah, Plum the Forbidden's black and one. As you cast it, as an additional cost to cast it, you can sacrifice one or more creatures, then you copy it for each creature sacrificed this way.
Okay.
Draw a card, lose a life. That one, and then guidance are the, like, big ones I see a lot of.
Yeah.
But then, like, I guess there's those ones, and then there's a couple of cards in, like, red and white that copy instants and sorceries from your graveyard and stuff.
Well, maybe it's more relevant than I thought, but I also thought for Eternal formats, that might make these Magecraft cards more interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a historic deck built around the Sedgemoor Witch.
Yeah.
And the Sedgemoor Witch and the Witherbloom Apprentice.
And then the other thing that I want to say about Magecraft is, like, for limited, Prowess can be cool, but it's not huge because you're just not playing that many instants and sorceries in a limited deck most of the time. But I think they did a really good job with Strixhaven by, like, encouraging you to play instants and sorceries and not making you feel like your decks were light on creatures, because there's a lot of creatures that you can recur in some way, and there's a lot of instants and sorceries that make you token creatures. So, like, they count as an instant and sorcery for Magecraft, and they count as a creature in your
deck. Yep.
So, I think that they've done a really good job of designing the set such that you can play, like, 10 or even 12 instants and sorceries in your limited.
Yeah. Not that anything has ever stopped me from doing that before. I know you love how structured my decks are.
I don't know very much about your decks. Like, you're basing all of that on, like, One time, I came into your room while you were doing a draft on Arena, and, like, I was just flabbergasted.
You asked me how many lands were in my deck, and I didn't know?
Yeah. That was, like, mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny. Oh, there's the white one that copies itself a lot, right?
I don't know. I haven't, like, seen any cards copy themselves. You mentioned it, and I had to go and look. I was like, oh, yeah, that spell does do.
Show of Confidence copies itself as well.
What is that?
Give target creature +1/+1 and vigilance till end of turn, and it copies itself for storm count.
Okay.
Or your instants and sorceries.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone cast that.
Me neither, actually.
Which, actually, it's kind of surprising, because it only costs 2, and so, like...
I mean, yeah, but I think you have to be playing a Magecraft deck. I pass that card all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I would want it either, though, because like, it just seems like it's asking you to set up a lot. Because for a +1/+1 counter and vigilance until end of turn, 2 is kind of a lot. Once you get 2 or 3 counters, it's actually pretty good, but that means you have to have played 2 other spells this turn.
Yeah.
And, like, that's just investing a lot in this, so.
I think that might be better as a constructed card.
Yeah, those standard storm deck.
Mm-hmm.
While we're talking about individual cards, kind of off topic of the things in particular we're talking about, but this Stonerise Spirit is the 1/2 spirit bird for a white and one.
It has
flying, and 4, an exile card from your graveyard. Target creature gains flying until end of turn. That guy is way better than I gave him credit for at first. And I'll tell you the exactly why is because he doesn't tap to use his ability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the 1/2 flying for 2 was kind of like, meh, you know? It's not terrible. And then this other ability on it is also not terrible. So I was kind of like, just eh, on the card. And then I realized I was actually helping someone else play a game, but they had it in their deck, and I was looking at what they could do. I was like, oh man, we've lost this game. We're just going to lose. And I was like, hold on. You can cast the Stonerise Spirit and give 2 other creatures flying this turn. Okay, we just win. And I was like, wow, that actually... Like, I know that's just, you know, like, one instance, right? And we don't want to be results-oriented or whatever, but that just...
It just made you reevaluate the card.
Yeah, it made me realize, like, hold on, this has a lot more utility outside of it just being a mediocre creature.
Yeah.
Were there any other cards that you want to talk about while we were talking about Strixhaven?
I mean, Dramatic Finale is, like, my favorite card in so long. It's 4 mana to cast, all of it's black-white hybrid, so you can pay any mixture of black and white mana to cast it, but sure. You gotta pay 4, right? It's an enchantment. It says creature tokens you control get +1/+1, and when one or more non-token creatures you control die, create a 2/1 flying black and white inkling creature token. This ability triggers only once per turn.
Okay, so even if someone, like, wipes your team, you only get 1 off of it?
Yeah, but I really like this card because I love making tokens. Mm-hmm. It makes tokens, but also it's just really interesting to me trying to find a balance between tokens making cards and non-token creatures so that my Dramatic Finale triggers and makes things.
Sure.
And so I just think this card is a lot of fun, and I've been playing it in Standard and Historic.
Oh, dude. Also, like, just this isn't what I was oh-duding about, but the inkling it makes is actually like a...
Yeah, because it's going to pump it automatically.
And that's a pretty strong token, a 3/2 flyer. Mm-hmm. But what I was saying, oh, dude, about...
And they stack.
What?
I said, and they stack, dude.
Yeah.
Like, if you have 2 Dramatic Finales in play and they wipe the board, then you get 2 4/3s.
Also, and what I was saying, oh, dude, about is, aren't there, like, 3 different cards in Standard now that are, like, 1/1s for 1 that die to make a 1/1 flying token?
Not flying, but...
Okay, there's at least 1 that makes a 1/1 flying spirit, right?
Not in Standard.
Well... Maybe I have to stretch outside of
Standard. Nor Arena, I guess, but...
Maybe I have to stretch outside of Standard to this or something, but...
Yeah, play, like, Modern.
But I'm pretty sure in Magic, there are quite a few now, just, like, 1/1 creatures.
There's a bunch of 1-mana stuff that makes 1/1 tokens when they die. Standard has 1 that makes a lifelink creature and 1 that makes just a 1/1 creature.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, 2-mana ones that make other things.
Still, that's quite a few creatures right there for the deck.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 8 of those 1-mana ones and some 2-mana ones. Like, we're getting quite a few creatures that all make tokens when they... Plus, you get the 2-1 flyer from Dramatic Finale. Into the lab, bring up a deck here.
Yeah, I like it.
Is this basically what you've been doing? You said you've been playing it in Standard and Historic.
I've been playing a lot of the 1-1 guy that makes a lifelink creature with it. I haven't really been playing like a bunch of that kind of creature. I've been playing actually a bunch of the learn creatures with it.
Yeah.
And then using those to go get instants and sorceries that make tokens.
Okay.
So I've been playing a lot of Eye Twitch and Professor of Symbology.
Symbolism. I believe the word you're looking for is symbolism.
Nope, because I am not investigating any murders. I'm talking about casting spells. I do want symbology.
All right.
So where were we? What else were we going to talk about?
We were just talking about individual cards.
Yeah, that was probably me just getting distracted about like fanboying over cards.
Yeah, that's cool. Another card that I want to call out, and a lot of the ones that I'm most interested in are commons, because like the rares I haven't seen very much, because I'm just playing limited. But
yeah,
I'm really happy with Big Play. Big Play is a green instant for a green and one, and its target creature gets +2/+2 and gains reach until end of turn. Put a +1/+1 counter on it. And like, 3-3 and 3-3 and reach until end of turn is pretty, that's pretty big. And then it gets to keep one of those. Like, this is just my favorite combat. But I'm not much a fan of combat tricks. I don't play a lot of combat tricks in limited. But Big Play does enough for me that I'm excited to pick it up. Because it's cheap enough at just 2 mana that I feel like I can leave mana up to play it without having a problem. It makes it big enough. It gives it reach, which can really help with where green is weak, you know? And
yeah.
And one of it stays on permanently, so I don't feel like I've completely lost the value of it after that one play, you know? Like, I'm just very happy with it.
Well, I guess something I'm really happy with, which don't tell anyone this, but is because it's a counter spell, it's Test of Talents.
Yeah.
That's one that's been really good and constructed for me, because it's a blue and one instant counter target instant or sorcery spell. And then search its controller's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with the same name as that spell and exile them. Then that player shuffles and they get to draw for each card you exile from their hand this way.
Yeah.
But, like, this card just stopping those dumb combo decks has just felt great for me. Like,
what do you tend to counter with Test of Time?
A lot of Emergent Ultimatums, really.
Okay.
But also just, like, it's probably really good against the, what's it called? The Neoform deck, because they try to Neoform and then copy it over and over to get to do their combo.
Okay.
So you can just pull all the Neoforms out, and now they just have to play a bunch of 3-mana 3-3s and hope that that can get them there.
Yeah.
Actually, I think they're a bunch of 3-mana 2-2s since they don't have Neoform. I just played against this Dragon's Approach deck in Standard, so like that could be really nice that it gets rid of that.
Yeah.
And then also just, like, I've just played it, and when you play against rogues, if you cast a Test of Talents, it's just like, look, all your Drown in the Locks are gone, or all your End of the Stories are gone. And those are, like, the backbreaking cards in that deck that make it so good. It's just Drown in the Locks, this 2-mana counter spell or removal spell for anything, you know?
Yeah.
Or End of the Stories, 4-mana draw 4 cards.
Right.
It's just nuts.
Yeah.
And so Test of Talents can just remove those cards from that deck, and it's just like, look, I countered this one and you don't have any more.
Yeah, I think that's pretty great. Feel free to tell me about any other individual cards that you want to talk about, but I was actually thinking we maybe talk about the templating changes they made to, like,
yeah,
the,
sure,
the way they express things on cards with this set, because
yeah, there's one super noticeable one.
Yeah.
With the changing converted mana cost to mana value.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
I think that it's fine, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really feel like it was needed in any way. So I'm kind of like, I don't like change. Don't change this. Yeah. But it is less words than converted mana cost, and converted was kind of a long word.
Sure.
So having mana value shortens the amount of text you put on a card for that same meaning.
Yeah.
And I think once it becomes the vernacular, it won't be really any different than converted mana cost, because both of them don't really do anything to tell a new player what that phrase means.
Right.
But they remind someone who does know what it means what that phrase means well enough just from what those cards mean in English, or words mean in English, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, I think they're both fine. You're going to have to explain either of them to new players, and this one's shorter. So, like, it feels like an unnecessary change, but, like, okay.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I think I'm kind of along the same lines in that I didn't find this necessary, and, like, I'm probably just an old man who doesn't like change. So, like, my initial reaction to it is definitely, I don't like this, you know?
yeah.
But I feel like part of the goal was to make the words more friendly to new players. Like, I don't think it helps any to explain what it means, but converted mana cost does sound very technical. And so, like,
it's a scary sounding phrase.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of scary sounding. And so mana value, I think, does sound better in that, or at least less technical for a new player. I think that's part of what they're going for. And if that is something they wanted, I think they probably succeeded. But personally, I think it actually means less. I think you're probably right. And, like, what you said is probably true, that neither one really is helpful if you don't already know what it means. And so either of them will probably be fine for those people who do know. But I do think that mana value actually has less actual meaning than converted mana cost. And so I tend to like converted mana cost better. But that, of course, is probably informed by my being the old man at the magic table going, oh, back in my day,
we said converted mana cost.
We said converted mana cost. And if you tapped mana you didn't use, it hurt you.
I'm bringing that back, though. Don't worry.
Like on one card.
Yeah, but it brings it back for everyone.
The other one is less noticeable. I think you could have even read this and totally overlooked it.
Yeah, I read a card that said it a second ago.
Yeah, it's just, instead of saying, like, that player shuffles their library, they just say, that player shuffles, or even just shuffle now.
Yeah. There was nothing else you shuffled ever?
Right.
That's not true, but hardly ever did you need to shuffle anything else.
Yeah.
I think there's a manifest creature that said that when it dealt combat damage to a player, you exile the top card of their library, and that card face down, and shuffled them, and then manifested both cards.
Okay.
So, like, I think there are other cards that exist that shuffled other things, but in general... Yeah, but
those cards can specify, and unspecified default to shuffling your library, right?
Yeah, because that makes 100% sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, I think that's fine. You don't need to tell everybody every time that what they're shuffling is their library. Now Green Sun Zenith can just say shuffle twice. You don't have to say shuffle your library.
Right. Like, on just because it happens to be on my screen, Fervent Mastery says on it, search your library for up to 3 cards, put them into your hand, shuffle, then discard 3 cards at random.
Yeah, Duncan, you're shuffling your hand, right? Because that's where you put those cards.
Right. Like, at one time, this would have said, search your library for up to 3 cards, put them into your hand, shuffle your library, then discard 3 cards at random. And so, like, I don't know. That I like this one. And so this is the flip side where, like, I've been telling myself, well, Duncan, maybe you just don't like change, you know? I don't know. This is a change, and I'm 100% on board.
Yeah.
But, were there any other, like, template changes or rules changes that they made with this set that we want to talk about?
Not that I know about.
Well, I know that we sort of mentioned Magecraft kind of in passing. What other, like, major mechanics were in this set?
They did the modal double face cards again, but the thing they did that's different this time around is there's some creatures that are not creatures on the back.
Yeah.
That are, like, instants and sorceries. I guess they've done some things that weren't creatures before, but, before, pretty much if it was a permanent, if it was a permanent on the front side, the back side was a permanent.
Sure.
And, like, that's different this time. That's, like, kind of different. Is there some creatures that are instants and sorceries on the back side?
Yeah.
See, what else have we got?
So, as our in-house judge, is there anything that we need to know about how those work? Or
I mean, it's still the stuff that we've known before is, like, what card it is on the front side is what it is in all zones except for when it's on the stack.
Sure.
And since the back side of those is not a permanent, then you don't have to worry about what it is on the battlefield because they don't go to the battlefield.
So they are a permanent.
Yeah. And so, I don't think there's really any new information on those, okay. But it's just a combination of modal double face cards they hadn't done yet.
Sure.
So creature on the front, instant or sorcery on the back.
Yeah.
Or artifact on the front, instant sorcery on the back, I think, for the black one, right?
Yeah, it is an artifact on the front. And, yep, it's a green sorcery on the back.
Yeah. There's several different cards with, like, that are modal, and they're a little bit more varied than a lot of previous modal spells. There's some just regular modal ones, choose one, do the thing. Mm-hmm. There's several, but there's a cycle of commands where you choose two, which we've seen that before, but it's not super common, so it's just worth mentioning, you know? And then there's, like, a blue one that does not technically a modal spell, but it's a card multiple choice that's just, like, what X is changes dramatically what the card does.
Yeah, it's, like, it's not, doesn't change the quantity of what's happening. It, like, changes what the card does.
Yeah. If X is 1, you scry 1, draw a card. If X is 2,
you choose a target player, return a creature. They return creature they control to their...
Yeah, or X is 3, you get a 4-4, and then if X is 4, you do all 3.
Yep.
And, like, so it's just an interesting, like, variation card, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's a lot of spells that, like, do different stuff in different scenarios.
Yeah.
And then, oh, the other big the other thing is lessons and learn, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just flipping through the cards looking for things that were kind of new to this set. You're
good. I was asking you what else I totally didn't occur to me either. It's like, it's not that I didn't know that lessons and learn were in the set. I just didn't think of it. So what is that? What's that about?
So lessons are a subtype they put on instants and sorceries.
Aren't they just on sorceries, actually? I'm pretty sure they're just sorceries.
It is just sorceries, but I guess there's no... I don't know any reason they can't put it on an instant.
Right.
Because instants and sorceries usually have the same sets of subtypes.
Sure.
So I said instants and sorceries, but in this set, it is all sorceries.
Okay.
And then learn is a keyword that, like, the lesson subtype doesn't inherently do anything on its own. It's like arcane from back in the day. It's like, this is just marking this card as this thing. Yeah.
This just happens to be a lesson.
Yeah, and they put a little reminder on the top left corner of any lesson cards to... There's a little symbol up there that just shows you this is a lesson up there, so it's easy to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what learn does is learn says that you may reveal a lesson card you own from outside game and put it in your hand, or you can discard a card to draw a card. And they put that in different ways. Like, if it's on an instant or sorcery, you'll just say learn on it, and you'll do it as the spell resolves. There's creatures that say when it enters the battlefield, you learn, or when it dies, you learn.
Yeah.
And so it's just... lessons are these instants and sorceries, that you want in your sideboard, so that whenever you play this creature, or you cast this instant or whatever, you'll get to go get this card you have from outside the game and put it in your hand.
Right.
And it lets these cards kind of basically draw you a specific card that you get to pick out, you know?
Yeah, it's like somewhere in between just like a cantrip and a tutor.
Yeah, but like all of the lessons are like overcosted ways of doing that thing generally.
Mm-hmm.
But since you don't have to put them in your deck, you only need to get them when you need them. I have felt like it's been very good.
Yeah.
Which does remind me to a rules change about the game that they did because of this mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll finish this and then we'll get to that.
Yeah, I think we've covered it.
Okay, well there is a rules change they made, which is... When playing best of one constructed or whatever, your sideboard is 7 cards instead of 15.
Yeah, I don't really like that. Like, I don't guess I care. It doesn't make much difference. But I realize the thing is, well, they didn't want people to have 15 different lessons in their sideboard since that's all their sideboard can be good for. But
yeah,
like, I kind of feel like you just should be allowed to. Like, that's how lesson and learn were designed is... Like, if you're playing best of three and you want to make your entire sideboard lessons, you can, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like they felt like if you're playing best of three, you were sacrificing a lot more to have your sideboard full of lessons than you were if you're doing best of one.
Yeah, you are, but...
And so they just felt like learn was more powerful in best of one that way, so they're trying to balance it so that learn isn't better in best of one than it is in best of three.
Yeah, okay. I still just feel like, you know...
I do find it annoying, because, like, now my Karn the Great Creator decks are worse in best of one.
Well, another...
But other than, if you don't have any questions about that, I guess we can go back to new mechanics in the set. Well,
real quick, so, as a comment on Learn, so I think Learn is also just more powerful than I want to give it credit for at first. It's like Cram Session is a green-black hybrid, and one, you gain 4 life and learn.
Yeah.
And I don't really like it. I don't like pure life gain cards, and I don't especially like a life gain card that cantrips, but when you can learn and go get a specific card, it does really make it a lot more powerful, and I think that card is better than I was giving it credit for. Because it's like a tutor that also just kind of gives you 4 life also.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other one?
Study Break.
No, this is a green-black card. I don't even know that it has learn on it. It's just...
Oh, what's it do?
It makes a creature...
Infused with vitality. Yes,
vitality.
It's a common.
Yeah, so it doesn't actually have learn on it, but this was another card in that like really makes the Witherbloom decks strong that I was undervaluing. I think it's part of what I think...
It does a lot, actually.
Yeah, I think part of why my Witherbloom decks have not been very good is because I have undervalued Cram Session and Infuse with Vitality, which are both common black-green spells that do a lot of work in that deck.
Yeah.
Because the Infuse with Vitality is, until end of turn, target creature gains Death Touch, and when this creature dies, return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control, you gain 2 life. And it's an instant, so it largely functions as a removal spell. You can also use it to save one of your guys. You can use it to make triggers go off and still keep your guy, and you also just gain the negligible. But
the gain life, though, is the mechanic that the Witherbloom decks...
The game life part is part of you can make things trigger and stuff because you have a bunch of triggers that go off when you... I think Infuse with Vitality and Cram Session are cards that I was undervaluing for Witherbloom, and I just mention that now because the Cram Session learn is the thing that makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. And so then the last mechanic I think we haven't gotten to is Ward, right?
Yeah, I guess Ward is a new thing. It's an ability that's shown up from time to time, never as a major mechanic, but it's an ability that's been around, but it didn't have a keyword before.
A keyword. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's a keyword, it just has some kind of cost associated with it, so it feels a lot like an ability word sometimes.
Yeah.
But what it is it's ward something, like ward 2, ward 3.
Ward pay life.
Or like ward pay 3 life.
Yep.
And what Ward does is just whenever that permanent becomes the target of a spell, just spell, right?
Or ability.
Spell or ability in opponent controls? Okay. When that permanent becomes the target of a spell or ability in opponent controls, you counter that spell or ability unless that player pays the Ward cost, which is usually mana, but there's quite a few of the ones that are more played are pay 3 life.
Yeah.
And so, like, Terror of the Peaks from Corset 2021 had that is, I think it only triggered off of spells. And then
what are they called? Like
Frost Titan from back in the day basically had Ward 2 of they have to pay 2 mana, right?
Yeah.
So,
and
it's that they have to pay 2 mana more to target it, but basically that's the same thing as countering it unless they pay 2, you know?
Yeah. And then there were like the Glass Kites, right? I guess they actually didn't have a way for you to pay for it to get it through. It's just like the first time every turn that they get targeted, they get that spell or ability gets countered.
Yeah, that feels very similar. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, what else is going on in Strixhaven that we wanted to talk about this episode?
Nothing else, I don't think.
Yeah, I think we pretty well covered things and
boiled down all of our stuff, like talking about the feel of the set, the mechanics of the set, talking about the cards we're excited about. We got it all crammed into one episode this time.
Yeah, and I don't know, we were kind of all over the place, but I think we got like the major points covered, and if there's anything else that we want to talk about a la Strixhaven, well, we probably got like another 8 or 10 episodes to talk about Strixhaven before we move on, right?
Yeah, move on to Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to that. Before we go, I did want to mention that we got an email while we were gone from Matt, and Matt said that he hopes things are going well for us, and he was hoping that we would bring the podcast back, because he's a newbie to MTG, and our show was his favorite Magic Show for updates and information. He said he particularly likes the finance section. So, like, I was really excited to get that email, and I think it's nice. That's very flattering, and I'm glad that Matt,
buy your modern staples. They're going up now. It's almost too late.
I'm glad that Matt enjoyed the show. And like I said at the top, we are kind of restructuring, so we're not going to necessarily have like the updates and information every episode, but we will be doing episodes about news when there's big news to do. And, man, we'll be cutting the finance section also, so I'm sorry, Matt, but I'm hoping we'll get Donovan to like maybe do maybe an episode each set or something like that, where we just spend some time about finance.
I mean, I do a finance tip every week, but I was struggling to be relevant with that every week anyways. And it was just maybe we'll talk about finance on stuff whenever there's something going on where, like, you know how we talked about the modern staples were at a low because of the pandemic? If something else like that happens where it's like, look, hey, these kinds of cards are super cheap right now. That may be what we talk about in the episode. Or if it's something small like, hey, these cards just got reprinted, I think you should get them right now. We may just mention it, you know?
Yeah, like, if it's not a section, we can just comment on it. Like Donovan just said, buy modern staples. Like, hurry, go now. It's almost too late. Like, that didn't take up too much time. In fact, we've now said it twice. so hopefully we will still have information here that's relevant to Matt. And I appreciate him writing to it. It'll be cool. If anyone else wants to get in touch with us, let us know what they think of our new format, or give us some finance tips so that we can relay them to Matt here, or just, you know, invite us to play some Strixhaven Limited. You can get us at planeswalkerspod@gmail.com. Donovan?
What's up?
Think that does it this week?
No.
No?
No, we still need to tell people that we can contact me at Boardwalk Games. I'm there selling Magic cards most days. It's in North Dallas. Or, if you want to, you can find me on the interwebs at I'm on the Twitters at day_Donovan. Or on Twitch at dday_99. I like underscores, apparently.
And if you want to tweet at me, I'm not great at the social media. You can check out our Facebook page. You can find Donovan on Facebook. But Twitter is about the only place you'll find me on social media. I keep up with that more than anything else. I probably manage Twitter a little better than Donovan does.
Oh yeah, we have a Facebook page.
But you can look me up at Engine Within on Twitter and tweet at me. If you at me, I will tweet, see tweet that me. And I will respond. What?
You stuttered on a great part because it made you say tweet at me.
Anyway, and for those of you...
Please, everyone who listens to this, send him a Twitter thingy, a tweeter at the twat.
No,
send him a thing on Twitter that says tweet.
Those my way if you want to.
Send him a Twitter that says tweet.
Yeah, at me
to make fun of him. I'll enjoy it. Yeah, please.
And I think the last thing here is, you know, if you are one of those people, one of those monsters who listen to our show just for the ad break, stick around. You might have something for you at the
Super Bowl. Nobody listens just for ads.
Podcast. Yeah, it's funny because anyone who's not a longtime listener would be like, why the hell would anyone listen to your podcast for the ads?
But yeah, we'll stick around and listen to the ad right after these messages from our sponsors. Wait, that's the same thing.
No, I mean, the message from our sponsors was at the top when I was like, hey, Boardwalk. You know, they,
And the thing where you talked about how to get in the Patreon.
Yep. Yeah, the Patreon, the Boardwalk. Right now, you can find us at, if you want to. It's not up right now. You can't actually contribute to it, even if you want to. But it's patreon.com/enginewithin. I said that I'm going to work on restructuring that. One of the things I'm going to do, I think I'm just going to change it to the Planeswalkers Anonymous Patreon. It was Engine Within because it was supporting a variety of things that I was doing. And on the internet, I am Engine Within. But I think I'm going to restructure that as just the Planeswalkers Anonymous Patreon and get that a little bit more focused, make it show up more in if you're like searching for something, or, you know, just kind of get the branding more on point.
Kick all of your Patreon followers from your nudie films out.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that, but we'll move them over to a separate thing. I'll get like an OnlyFans or something for that.
Okay, that seems smart.
Yep, and I'm gonna try and put some cool rewards in there, including this month and next month. If you happen to join us, a foil Japanese Mind's Desire and a Mystical Archive Demonic Tooth.
Just to everyone who joins?
No.
That seems ridiculous.
No. Yeah, you get a chance to win.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, I guess I should be clear about that. I don't want to sign myself up for something I can't afford. Also, just to be fair and clear here, I'm pretty confident this is Mind's Desire. It is in Japanese. It's a blue and 4, and it's got a lot of text on it. I think
sounds like Mind's Desire.
I think that's the only Mystical Archive that's a blue and 4. But
is it got a lady with a gem on her head
and a bird in the background?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's a Mind's Desire.
All right, great.
Set number, card number 80.
Hold on, let me get it back out. I put the cards back in the package. So, yep, card number 80.
Yep.
Awesome. And 82 is opt, I guess.
Alphabetically, that would make sense. But my thing clicked me all the way back to the top of the page.
That's alright.
It's unfortunate that people, this gives away that we're not sitting in the same room. People will know. Because I know what opt looks like. Yeah, that's 82.
Alright, cool. And the Demonic Tutor is in Ingram, so.
Is it?
I feel pretty confident about that one.
Do you read the English?
Yeah. So, I don't know, Don. Let's shut it down and get out of here. Give old
Fenric
Swindler or whoever's coming on after us a chance to have his way before the show ends.
I mean, I already said later days.
When you think about attending Strixhaven, you probably imagine the building, the classroom. You picture the Biblioplex, Strixhaven Stadium, or the Hall of Oracles. The places where you'll attend classes, study, or take a test. But when you arrive at Strixhaven, you'll realize education is more than classes and tests. It's people meeting people. It's winning the debate championship for Silverkill. It's getting the star role in the Prismari musical. It's learning from each other and growing together. There are books. There are tests. There are classrooms. But the most important experience you'll have at Strixhaven can't be put down on paper. It's magic. Come to Strixhaven and experience the magic. Strixhaven, School of Mages. All right. I don't know. Do you think we need to say anything else for the recording?
I think we're good.
All right. Cool.
Where does the bloopers go now? Where's the bloopers reel? They go
well
after the.
I guess if we keep doing bloopers
and the fade out music still.
Yeah, I guess so. Like maybe we should say something after the ad so that we can then go to fade out music and then have the bloopers play after the fade out. I'll see how it goes when I do the editing.
Okay. I believe in you.
You know what? Never mind. I will figure it out. I'll figure it out. We're done here.
Are you ready to rumble?
White mages all look the same.